coming to you from the City of the Weird. Exploring topics from the esoteric and unexplored to dimensions unknown. Shining a light of truth on the darkest corners of our reality. Welcome to the Curious Realm. Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 60 of Curious Realm. Man, we've been doing this a long time, folks. If you were tuned in ever for our previous incarnation, Dudes and Beer, before the rebrand last year, we have covered some ground over the last many years, and I'm very proud for the award over my shoulder right there from everybody. News and politics, that was fantastic to win on the way out the door as the show rebranded. And since the rebrand, we have had all kinds of guests and researchers on, gone out and sponsored numerous events and been at numerous events. One of them was the International Association of Near-Death Studies in Salt Lake City, Utah. That was an absolutely incredible event. We got some great interviews and met some fantastic individuals who had visited the other side. And tonight, our guest in the first segment coming up will be Joshua Lewis. He is the author of the book, Finding Hope in the Afterlife. He is the founder of Hope Paranormal, as well as the creator of the Hope Spirit Box app, and soon to be the Hope Spirit Box Pro software for communicating with the other side. That is our topic with Joshua this evening, is spirit communication, communication with the other side, the safety behind it, other things that are involved with it, how he came to get into that. It has been a long time curiosity of mine. Probably one of the first paranormal things I ever got into was old school EVP recording. And we'll be getting into some of that with Joshua, some of the techniques that he uses out in the field, and some of the things that have led him to create the Hope Spirit Box app and software. Before we get into that, let's of course go into our news of the week segment. It's been a couple weeks since we've been live, so it's hard to do the news of the week. Unfortunately, my Wayback Machine goes forward and back 30 seconds, folks, so I can't predict the news 2 weeks ahead of time, but we get pretty close. Stop on by, check us out on Facebook. Our group is, of course, Curious Realm. That's where you can post articles, take part in conversation. Out of Yahoo News, a 23-year-old golden boy mummy was found with 49 amulets, including a golden tongue to allow him to speak with the gods. Out of thehill.com, this is one that brought up quite a bit of conversation. Human microchip implants are taking center stage. I'm getting ready to have somebody on about that technology. We talked with Dr. John Hall a little bit about it last time. We had him on. Out of Intel Hub News, adventurous breach of Area 51 restricted airspace led to pilot's quick demise. There is some amazing audio in there that was released not too long ago about that actual event. Pretty phenomenal. Out of New York Post, spaceship of, quote, non-human origin spotted near the U.S.-Mexico border, says UFO expert. And out of Fox News, former Vice President Mike Pence discovered classified documents in his Indiana home. I can't imagine. That is some of the news that is fit to print, folks. Stop on by, join the conversation on Facebook, follow the page. That's where you can get all the updates. Make sure to stop on by while you were there. Of course, to the Curious Realm website, that's where you can find all the episodes. That's where you can tune in. You can actively play the Curious Realm lottery. If you go to curiousrealm.com/24-7, you will be played a random episode of Curious Realm. So if you don't know what topic or guest to listen to, hop on by there. It'll randomly choose an episode for you and get you moving. Our guest tonight in our first segment is the founder of Hope Paranormal. He is the creator of the Hope Spirit Box app, as well as the author of Finding Hope in the Afterlife. Welcome to the show, Joshua Lewis, how are you doing this evening?
Thanks for having me, Chris. I'm doing well. Thanks for having me. I'm excited to talk.
I have been looking forward to this since Michelle connected us and booked the show. Communication with the afterlife is something that I have been fascinated with for probably about 20, 30 years of my life. And even going, being one of the only sponsors of the IANS conference this last year, the other sponsor was the Bigelow Institute.
Yep.
And have you submitted to their contest?
I mean, I have a great story with them. I mean, it's unfortunately, it doesn't end, I guess, on a happy
positive note.
It's not, well, it's actually not a bad, I mean, it is what it is. I'll just tell you what happened.
Sure.
It's okay. It's, so they had the contest last year. You know, every year I think they've been doing it. I think the first year, I don't know when if it was the first year last year, but anyway, they did it. And I, you know, my book had just come out I emailed them and I said, you can keep them, the $1 million. I'll write you, I'll send you, you know, evidence, you know, for free, whatever. And so I, you know, wrote them, and I sent them this stuff. I sent them a couple things and they emailed me back that, you know, the head of the department there of the whole institute, the head PhD, you know, he had contacted me and he goes, if we were to work with you on some level, how would you prove your ability? How would you, you know, show us? And I said, it's very simple. I said, you know, I would say, give me two different experiments where you would call me, from, you know, from your place or whatever. And you have a sitter, you have someone that I can read, but it will be a blind cold reading. So what you would do is that, you know, you would just, you know, give me a name, the first name, that's all I need. And then I'm going to, you know, for 30 minutes, I will tune into that person. And I just based on them saying their name once, the first name, and I will read them for 30 minutes with no feedback. So I just have to give you the stuff and I don't get any confirmation or anything back. And then I would, and then, you know, for the second part of the experiment, after getting the information for the first 30 minutes, I will then turn on my equipment, my ITC instrumental transcommunication equipment, and use it to try to validate what I got, intuitively. And so he says, you're on, you know? And, so,
wow.
You know, we did, yeah. And so we did it one day where, you know, he said, well, I'm going to call you at this time. And you know, sure enough, I was set up and then they called and it was just a phone call and, you know, I put them on speaker. And so the first woman came on and she said her first name and I did exactly what I just described. I got a few things. I got, you know, their culture. I got the first initial of the name, who was there, some description, and I get no feedback from her. And then, like I said, I turn on my stuff and I start getting instant, you know, replies that are validating what I got. So I don't even need the feedback. Or I didn't, I mean, of course I got it later on, but I'm saying like, I didn't need her to say anything. I was getting, the spirit to come through and confirm what I got. So that went well. We did that. We did another one and the results were, you know, pretty amazing again. I got, you know, a lot of hits in my intuitive and then they were able to hear the responses come through the box. So at that point, they offered me a job to work with them.
Oh,
which was really amazing. And this is what's, and this is what bothers me, I guess, and nothing against them. I mean, literally,
sure.
I have nothing against them. In fact, they did what they had to do. And I respect them for it. And I'm grateful for the time that I got to work with them and just do those things. But, you know, I had sent the director of the program over there my book prior to even doing the experiments. And I said, please just take a look at my book a little bit, even the, like you did, the first 100 pages.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, that's all I'm asking because, you know, I detail my story completely. I'm very upfront and open about what I've been through. And so, you know, I got into a lot of trouble early on. I was addicted to drugs and alcohol. I've been, you know, recovered 18 years. And, but, you know, so they offer me the job and they make me fill out this like, you know, long, like, you know, background thing. And I'm like, I'm telling you, there's going to be some things you're going to find on that.
Yeah. Yeah.
And whatever. And they came back and they said, unfortunately, our legal department won't let us hire you, but we really much enjoyed working with you and you did well, you know? So then anyway, that was that, but I got to prove my ability, with an institute. I mean, and I've done that a couple of times in ways, you know?
Yeah. And an incredible institute that is out there and accredited with things. And like they were saying, how can we, their issue is how can they quantifiably show the result?
Absolutely. Correct. They can't publish the results if they've got, unfortunately, someone who was arrested, you know, in his younger years. And I get it.
Well, yeah. And I mean, even aside from that, it's the fact of it's hard to because their thing is scientifically publishing these things. Much right. Like whenever I went to the International Remote Viewing Association, you know, like you go there and then you find out that all the people involved with the founding of remote viewing are all PhD laser physicists.
Right.
And things like that, you know, and they can scientifically and quantifiably show their results by numbers. And it's very fascinating.
Well, anything that they were gathering, the information that they were gathering, I mean, the director stayed on the phone the whole time. So the experiments went very well and they were happy with the results. It's that my credibility, because of my past from 18 years ago. And I understood that, you know, I was disappointed. But I understood it.
Well, and I was very impressed when I was there this last year was when they announced the $1 million in grants.
Yep.
Because of course they had the program before Jeffrey Mishlove, was the essay winner, for the big essay contest that they had for like $100,000 or $500,000, I think it was.
It was broken up.
It was like a half a million for the prizes. Top prize and another $500,000 broken up between the other two. Yep, this is really interesting to see them offering up to $1 million in grants for people that can quantifiably prove contact with the other side.
Yeah. I mean, it's really awesome. I mean, and I guess that, you know, I think what I'm grateful for is that someone like myself, that, you know, started off with a rough past, was able to recover and be able to do this work and not have to rely on, you know, having to work with an institute or something else. Now I want to, and I will continue to do so as far as when I can. I've done some really cool projects with Stephen A. Schwartz. I've worked, you know, under the tutelage of Deborah Lynn Katz, PhD, who is the president of the remote, you know, viewing, you know, association. Absolutely. So yeah, she's my teacher. And we taught a master class together. So, I mean, there's a lot of cool things that I'm going to like kind of crowbar my way into, I guess, if I have to. But I'm going to keep doing what I do and I'm not going to, you know, I mean, there's an organization out there that I wanted to support and they were very, you know, close knit and they did some other things that were, you know, whatever, but you know, I respect what they're doing and that's the Soulphone Foundation. Yet I've never seen anything that they've really done and they haven't showed it and they're doing it the right way as well. I mean, they're working with, you know, the University of Arizona and Dr. Gary Schwartz and, you know, so they're doing some things over there and they're working on the soul switch and this and that and this. But, you know, while that's going on and they keep kind of, you know, actively looking for, you know, donations to keep their 501c going and all that. I mean, I'm trying to put things out there now that will legitimately work, things that I'm using, things that I'm getting results with on a regular basis. Every day I'm using it. I've done, you know, up to this point, over 3,000 paid intuitive readings.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I mean, and that's with no gear, no equipment or anything. That's just my psychic ability, my mediumship ability. And then I'm, you know, doing private box sessions for clients. And I've done hundreds of those along with gallery type group sessions that are virtual. They're online. People can tune in on Zoom and I ask for their loved ones. So there's a lot of, and we're getting definitive, undeniable, detailed results, you know, and it's communication. So it's not just audible, it's visual stuff that we're capturing as well. So it's wonderful. Yeah.
Well, let's back up for just 1 minute and for those that haven't had a chance to read the book, Finding Hope in the Afterlife,
right.
Let's get into what brought you into this field of study and what connected you to begin with your intuition.
Well, I mean, you know, I'll try to sum it up. I mean, what I think, you know, what happened was after I got out of being locked up, I was locked up for a couple of years and that saved my life. And when I got out, I had nothing, no place to live, no job. You know, I mean, I had to start from scratch. And so I started, you know, attending, you know, recovery meetings and I opened up a business for myself and that led to another business. So I did well just in a matter of a few years being out and, you know, making a decent living for myself, starting a family. And when I did that, I kind of took some time off. I wanted to take some time off from being the entrepreneur, I guess, that I was. And, I wanted to kind of, you know, delve more into the spiritual and what happens. I'd seen shows on TV. And, I was getting involved in film and doing some really cool things with film. That was always a passion of mine. But I couldn't trust movies as far as to tell us what happens with paranormal. And so me and my partner, Nikki, we saw some YouTube channels that were kind of playing around with these little spirit boxes and voice recorders and capturing voices. And we went out and did that. I said, let me see what's going on with that. And, you know, and I'd go out there and I'd record. And then I'd go back home and I would listen and review like I saw. And, you know, sure enough, I was hearing help me and I was hearing, you know, need the light, or I was hearing names and them saying our names and answering yes and no questions. And there was definitively responses, you know, communication, you know, that we were capturing. And so then I asked, when I heard the help me's, it kind of made me think like, well, what, you know, maybe are they stuck? Like, I didn't understand what that meant. Sure. And I never really had any experience with any kind of mediums or anything. So I was, you know, but I was very spiritual. I had a belief in a higher power in God. I still do very much. That's the whole point. And I'd ask help. I'd pray and I'd say, if I'm supposed to do something or, you know, help me understand the next phase of this. And I met this medium. And I said, can you come out with us and check and see what you're getting and feeling? And I kind of wanted to test her. And when I brought her out to these places that we already had been, you know, she was getting information on her own without me saying anything to her about stuff that I already had kind of picked up in the area or names that I had picked up. So there was some real truth to that, but I still was kind of in disbelief. And after a couple months of working with her, you know, she got a message, you know, intuitively that we were going to, you know, my partner and I, Nikki, were going to start hearing and seeing them and feeling them and spirit. And I mean, she was in disbelief, my partner, Nikki, and I was too. And, you know, months passed and sure enough, you know, something was different with Nikki first and then myself. And we started to feel things when we were out in the field doing these investigations and stuff. And you know, we would just say it. And the person we were with, if we were working on a case or like a residential case, they'd say, yes, that's right. And so Nikki just kind of started to kind of work with her ability on her own naturally. I wanted to go further with it where I started working with Deborah Lynn Katz, you know, a PhD
with
the International School of Clairvoyance. And, you know, and I started taking her courses, you know, privately with Deborah. And I was telling this on an interview not too long ago about how she prepared me. I mean, she did such amazing things in these exercises.
She's an amazing individual.
Really is. And I just love her to death. And I talk about her in my book and, you know, and she said, you know, like she gave me this or she goes, I'm going to kind of throw you right into the fire. She goes, I'm going to give you a name and I'm just going to leave you alone for 30 minutes and let you just kind of go off that name. And so she says this name, Manny, and that's it. And I start tuning in and doing the exercises, and she's just not going to say anything. And I'm, and so I go, you know, this young guy, young kid, maybe 16, looks like he's mixed gender, mixed race. I don't know what I said, but, and I see this, you know, this quad, he's riding a quad in the desert, and I see a sombrero and I see a guitar. And all of these things were coming in kind of sporadically. They were coming in randomly. They felt random. They didn't make any sense to me. So the whole time I'm doing this, and I'm saying what's coming to me, I think I'm nuts. Like, it's not make. I think I'm just kind of making this up because it's kind of coming in as thoughts, you know. And
sure.
And after I give her, you know, a bunch of these things, you know, she goes, "All right, that's enough." She goes, let's stop there. And I go, okay. And she goes, "All right, so let me tell you, you know, what you got." And I said, "Okay." And she goes, "Manny's my son," she said. And he is, he's 17 or whatever. She said, "He's, you know, part Filipino and, you know, and he's my son. So, you know, he's mixed, like, so that's right. And we live in the desert, and he has a quad that he rides around, and on in his room, he's got this big sombrero hanging on his, you know, on his wall, and he sits on his bed and he plays his guitar." And I mean, it was absolutely insane. It was just amazing. And of course, as I was, you know, as I just told you that, that was exactly the same type of experiment that I did with the Bix Institute. Mm. So that same first, you know, initial training that Deborah gave me 10 years ago was something that it was exactly what I was, you know, doing with Bix. So that's what I did. And I kept going further, and I started doing readings, and then, you know, but all the time I was working with my boxes and working with the gear, and the messages that I was capturing were getting clearer and better. And what I would do is I would tune in, intuitively, and I would get stuff from the spirit, and then I would ask them to come through and confirm that. And that's exactly what, you know, what was happening. So that's how I got into it. And I never, you know, if you said, you know, 10 years ago that this is what I'd be doing and how I'd be doing it, or, you know,
this is where your life would lead once you got outside,
I'd say you're crazy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Crazy.
And, you know, it's interesting because, the more remote viewers I talk to, especially those involved with remote viewing research, mm-hmm. not just their own session keeping, things like that. The more I find the fact that, much like you, this is not a skill set that you are claiming that you had when you were 8 years old, or that you had your first experience with this when you were five, or that it runs in your family,
which we hear all the time. Which,
oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Right. But, the one thing that I hear more than anything is that this is latent. This absolutely. Is there with
age
all of us,
and
with enough training and with enough openness. It was really interesting to hear Hal Puthoff. I'd had Kathleen Martin on, from MUFON, and she was sharing an experience talking with an experiencer who had, passed through, a UFO UAP. And it was interesting when I went to IRVA to hear Hal Puthoff talking about the exact same story. But in the right that the reason we're starting to see these is a shift in vibration and an acceptance of shift in vibration.
Right, right. That makes sense.
And even the fact of you being open to this experience at the age of 33.
I know.
When it happened.
That's, you know what, you bring up, you really do throw, yeah, that, you know, you really bring up a really good point. And that's, you know, I've always joked with people. I said I could be called the skeptic psychic, because a lot of it was, I'm still in disbelief at times, and you said it, you hit the nail right on the head. I was driving in my car today, and I was thinking about the stuff I'm doing, working on. I just did a session two sessions today, and I'm going, I'm still blown. I was talking to myself, as I often do. And I was like, I'm still blown away by by this work. And I said, I'm glad. I said, the day that I am not really blown away by this anymore, I think I'm going to lose something. I think it's going to hurt me because, you know, I don't want to become immune to this. I, even though I've been doing this 10 years, I've done so many sessions. It's still just as mind blowing and exciting to me when I go back to review a session and I hear a direct response, or I get a direct response in real time that answers my question. I mean, that's just mind blowing.
Well, and I think more than anything, what it provides, especially that wonder and awe, is also the skeptical once again.
Right.
Because you're still willing to say, maybe not.
And, oh, absolutely.
And that is hugely important. That is something that we have talked about with numerous paranormal investigators on this show. I think it is a huge conversation that needs to be had.
Sure.
In the paranormal community. Not that shows and TV shows and everything else have not led to a more open conversation. Absolutely.
Yeah, no, right. But you have to be willing to debunk.
Yes.
Or you have to be willing to challenge. You have to be willing to talk about the process. And if you're not, which a lot of channels aren't, and I'm not a channel. I have a channel. I tell people that. I say I'm not a channel. I have a channel on YouTube, but I'm not. I mean, I have a lot. I have you know, the book, the app, the program, the events, the sessions. So what I'm doing is way farther outreach than more than just YouTube. But there's a lot of people that are on there that, you know, could be doing better work, or they're doing good work, but they're not willing to talk about it more. And I find that, you know, I've had people, you know, almost, you know, I mean, really, I mean, I've had people attack me, you know, verbal, all kinds of things. But I'm saying I've had some that were true skeptics and really were just so like they, you know, they were used to everyone blocking and deleting them and just not even listen, you know, because they were, you know, classified as a hater or whatever. And I would go and say, wait a minute, I see you're attacking me here, but let's just talk about this for a second. Everything I do is real and I'm willing to talk about it with you and I'm willing to answer your questions. And a lot of them would go, holy cow, man, I'm sorry. I'm not even used to anyone responding to me here. I didn't even, you know, I give you a lot of credit for even just responding. And we've had some really cool, you know, conversations that people went, you know what, this guy is not like the rest. There's a lot that I haven't been able to talk to because they won't let it because their belief system won't let it. But that's okay, you know?
Yeah.
Well, I have to be okay with it.
That's where they are in their walk.
Right.
And, you know, you really do have to have that attitude. Otherwise, even if you're somebody of religious leanings, you're headed for trouble. With an elitist attitude.
Right.
And at the same token, you have to be willing to question result. You have to be willing to highly examine result. And like you said, put it through a process of check and double check to make sure the result is what it is. Like any paranormal work I ever did out on site, I do not recall ever looking at pictures on site, reviewing video, listening to audio, anything like that. That was, I mean, even whenever I worked with bands and gave them a recording, it was like, listen to this on Sunday.
Right.
Like, don't listen to this tonight. You're going to be in a different mindset.
And that's exactly what I talk about in my book. I talk about the four stages of preparation, but also the review process and what I do for the review. You know, I worked with, you know, one of the other professionals that I sought out was a guy who is a forensic audio expert, and his name is Ed Primo. Now, Ed Primo was on CNN. He's done the missing flight of the M flight. I forgot the number. He did
The Malaysian Air.
Yeah, the Malaysian Air black box recording. He did the Trump tapes, all these things. Like, this guy's really been around. He's one of the top guys in the country. And I saw him talking to Chris Cuomo. And the next day I looked him up and I called his office and we started talking. And I said, yeah, I have a voice recorder that records amazing, you know, messages, and I'd love to get it to you and see what's going on. And he said, I'm interested, you know, and so I paid him to kind of analyze. I sent him my recorder, you know, for him to try to create an exemplar, you know, try to reproduce the sound, which he could not. He said that sound waves that were coming off of the waveforms were hitting the frequency that a human voice would
natural and proper range.
And so he said, and the tempo and the tone, or what did he say?
I'm the trying meter.
To paraphrase.
Yeah,
what he said, but he's like, the tempo and the way that the sound is moving is indicative of human speech. He says, I can hear what you believe is being said. I would like to know more so how the sound is getting onto the recorder. That was his scientific approach, you know? And so we worked together, but I got his book and he talks about the review process of how he reviews audio. Now he reviews audio that's not from Spirit. He's doing it. That's the Mob or something else like that. He would transcribe some FBI surveillance audio, whatever, and then he'd go to court and testify why, as an expert, why this is saying this. And that's what he would do. But he talks about the same thing about not listening the same day or the same, or, you know, getting up and only sitting for a certain amount of time before the hairs in your ears start to get tired and lay down and you hear sound differently. You know, have fresh ears, be objective, listen to the same recording over the course of multiple days at different times in the day. And so that's my review process. I mean, that's what I do. And
Let's get into those four steps of preparation, because I think more than anything, that is there's a lot of folks in a lot of paranormal fields side fun UFO investigation, Sasquatching, paranormal ghost hunting out in cemeteries, what have you, that it's a very run and gun attitude.
Don't get me wrong.
Hey, always have a camera ready. I carry a little FLIR camera in my backpack. Like, you never know. But it's also one of those, there's some preparation that you should go through to be ready to go out and do field work as well. Four steps that you have are a good primer for that. So let's get into that real quick.
Well, I mean, you know, I used to do a lot more residential and I'd go and do a lot of location work and stuff. You know, I did do that. And on my events that I have, you know, I've had a couple events. I have another one coming up in Savannah, February 10th through the 12th. And I do, you know, we go to a location and we conduct a paranormal investigation the first night. Second night, I do a presentation and workshop. And then the third night, I do a gallery session where I reach out to everyone. But, you know, I don't do those investigations as much as I used to, mainly now I do a lot of my work from home and I do it in my session room in my office. And so these steps are really kind of, you know, because you don't have to go anywhere to talk to anyone. You can connect to anyone you want from your chair at home. I know that sounds, I mean, of course the energy is going to be stronger on location and you know, you're going to connect to things that you didn't, that maybe you wouldn't be aware of sitting in your office chair. But if you look, you know, kind of remote view access a location, you can actually connect with energies there and you can have. And so I do my readings from home. So that's what I do. But before I do a session, it's important that, yes, there's four stages that I do. And that, you know, the first one is really about the preparation of the prayer, meditation, and intent. And that is because I have to set my intention of who I'm going to be reaching, who I want to reach out to. Okay. So if I'm doing something in a location, let's say I'm going to a location, I don't know who I'm going to be reaching out to, but I want to prepare myself for the location. I want to make sure that I've meditated, that I've cleared any negative residual energy I have. I want to be as clean as possible. I want to wash myself in cosmic light. I want to ground myself with a grounding cord. I want to bring up some earth energy. I want to run some energy. It's like sitting in the power, running some energy. I want to do those kinds of things. And then I want to say a prayer to my higher power. And I want to say that I'm going to go do this, a session, or I'm going to go to this location. And I thank you for your help and your guidance, your support, and your protection, you know, and I really want to do that. Okay. And that's just for me. But I wouldn't do this work if I didn't have some kind of belief in a higher power. That's just me. It doesn't mean that other people have to listen to that. I just think that that's important. It doesn't mean you have to know who God is and has to, it's, and that it's a religious thing, but you have to have some sense of connection with a higher power. Because I think that's important on drawing on that power.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, so that's important. And then, you know, like I said, I set my intent. If I want to reach someone, the second stage is, you know, is the technology and equipment preparation. Nothing sucks more than conducting a session and your batteries die, or the thing, the internet doesn't work, or the equipment doesn't work, or you're on in the field and you're not prepared with something because you thought you had it all. You know, no, before you do anything, you want to make sure that your equipment and everything is updated and your batteries are charged and all that stuff is prepared. So that's, you know, step two as far as doing that. And then of course, three is conducting the session, or the investigation, and trying to be as present as possible, trying to just tune in. You know, I talk about that we are our own best piece of paranormal equipment. You know, my buddy John Zapp says that from War Party Paranormal. He's a good friend of mine. And so, you know, I've always agreed with that. And that's something that I definitely feel. So we can tune in and so we do the session and we have faith that if we're meant to capture an EVP, a response, a piece of visual phenomenon, you know, something that happens, then it will happen. Yeah. And that we don't need to stress it and worry about it. So you just go through that and you do that. And then when you're done, you want to close the session with a prayer, you know, or an intent that you are closing it and it's over, it's done. And then, of course, the fourth stage, which is, I mean, if it's not, I would say it's the most important, but it really is almost the most important stage, is the review practices, you know, and how to review. And that's what I was talking about, that, you know, 90% of what you're going to capture most of the time is going to be found in your review. So make sure you have a good camera and all that. But when you go back, you want to really take your time. If I record for 10 minutes, a bunch of responses, you know, in a spirit box session or something, that footage of 10 minutes is or audio is normally going to take me, I mean, close to maybe an hour or more.
At a minimum.
At a minimum, right.
Yeah.
To really effectively, I mean, I record 2-hour sessions for my patrons and I'll do that twice a month. And to go through 2 hours of footage that contain about 20 people that I'm reaching out to in one sitting takes me hours, like 8 hours to review that footage.
Oh, absolutely.
So, yeah. And I have to go through it multiple times, and I have to go through it. You know, if I review something at night, it's not going to be as sharp. I'm not going to be as sharp as I would be during the day.
Yep. Well, so I've done audio video editing for years professionally, and that is the calculation. Whatever your raw footage is, you can guarantee it'll take four times as long.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
You have to go through and watch the raw footage. You have to see where you want to cut.
Right.
Everything else, like it's a process, and properly reviewing footage is a process.
It's a process and it's so necessary, and a lot of people don't do it. And a lot of these other, you know, there's other channels and other people that are doing ITC and I have a trained ear. So if I listen, I can hear they're getting good responses, but they're not slowing it down. They're not trying to clean it anything up. And I understand about playing a raw session because it's kind of pure, like, you know, whatever people hear, they hear that is actually really good. You know, some people believe in not putting captions, just kind of putting the raw. Yeah. 30 minute. And I think there's something to be said about that's a really honorable, cool way to do it. I found that, you know, I want more and more people to see the work that I'm doing. I want them to know what the work that I'm doing. And so, you know, some of my videos are kind of boring because I talk and whatever.
There's nothing wrong with taking the clip and cleaning it up, boosting the audio, things like that.
Yeah, trying to do a little
back
bit of
to
that.
Backing it, where you hear the original two or three times, and then you hear the corrected audio. That way you can really get a good. And I'm trying to remember the name of the tapes that came out years ago. It was a friend of mine that gave me. It was like the Spirit Sessions or something like that. And it was a bunch of the original EVP recordings that were done many years ago. And like I said, I very much, as an audio engineer, very much got into the idea of EVP and the idea of weak magnetic field manipulation of analog record heads.
Analog like recording, that. Right.
Now, one of the questions that I've had for years, and this is what I said beforehand, that I may have a couple of fastballs to come over the plate tonight.
Sure.
One of my questions is how do the spirits manipulate the ones and zeros of an algorithmic recorder?
I have no idea.
As opposed to the weak magnetic field of a record head.
I do, you know what? That's a wonderful question. And that's something that me and my, my developer friend, Dennis, talk about. He's very analytical. He's a skeptic, and he's created with me from my own experience, because I'm using it now, is one of the best ITC tools I've ever used in my life, in the Hope Spirit Box. And so, you know, first off, you have a guy like Frank Sumption back in, you know, late 90s, 2000s, and he was working on creating spirit boxes. Really, he didn't create a spirit box. It was to communicate with aliens. That's why he created these radio based boxes. But he's the godfather of the radio based, you know, spirit box. And so, you know, the whole basis behind that is that you've got, it's skipping radio stations, AM, FM radio stations, and there is, you know, blips of sound from broadcasts that you're hearing as it is scanning in different milliseconds. And the spirit is supposed to use it and speak. And so I would capture responses, and I didn't understand. And I talked to some other guys in the field, and I asked them, and they didn't really know how it would, you know, how it worked, but they had some ideas and theories. And some of them told me that, you know, that they think that they're plucking words from the broadcast and trying to time it right to give you the answer. Mm. And I found that when I would run my box at like 100 milliseconds, I mean, you're talking very fast skip rate.
Yeah.
And that's like, you know what I'm saying? Really quick. And you're hearing it. There's no way for a real word to come through that, especially. So when you capture a phrase over 3-4 stations, that made me think that they're not taking words. They're taking bits of sound and manipulating the sound to form their own responses. So if that's the case, then we don't need to listen to this white noise that we are getting, the static from the spirit box. That was really annoying. And it was a constant rate of sound. Mm-hmm. So that's when it came into working with, you know, raw sound, human speech. And so there's a guy out there that, you know, I used to work with, and, you know, and he was kind of like a mentor to me, you know, but he was working with sound, kind of doing this kind of thing and kind of playing around with it, but he was using forward speaking speech. And so he would capture responses that were not on the original raw audio of forward speech. The problem, though, is that it was too messy. It was too sloppy to do that kind of technique or that method, because you have way too many chances of still getting false positives. Sure. And false positives will plague any, you know, paranormal guy.
Yeah. Audio pareidolia.
Pareidolia as well. Yeah. Absolutely. But the false positives of having a word come through from the broadcast of a radio, or a word coming through from when he was using this forward speaking speech, that was a problem. And so sometimes he would tag something thinking it was a spirit speaking, and then he would post his results, and someone would find the original clip, and they would say, "No, you're a fake." And I don't think that he was faking it. I think he was just not vetting his evidence properly. He was not reviewing it properly. That's what made me say, okay, you know what? I don't want this. I don't want to deal with any more false positives. So now what I'm going to use is, I'm going to take human speech and I'm going to reverse it. I'm going to slow it down about 50%, and then I'm going to chop it up into 2-second increments, and I'm going to rearrange it randomly. So now we've got an MP3 track, digital track, right, of human speech, but it is complete and pure gibberish. And that is what the sound banks are on the HSV-1. And what would happen is that I would then, you know, keep the box quiet. I, you know, choose a bank of the gibberish, and I would then ask a question in quiet. And then I would open this gate, this noise gate up, and allow some of that raw sound with a reverb. Now, if I don't add reverb, they can still use it just like a regular spirit box, but it's harder for them. And when you get a response, it's really clear because there's no echoey sound to it, right? But it's harder for them. So if you add the reverb, it elongates the sound wave. They're able to manipulate that sound. And so there, at that point, that's when I was capturing, you know, very clear, yes, I'm here. It's me. You know, I love you. 2-3 word responses. And I knew that I was onto something, and I knew that we had something, you know, really powerful. They started the spirit using it in a way that was, you know, even giving more detailed information. Now, some people will say, well, some of those responses I can hear directly. I don't even need captions for, but there's a lot of them that you put a caption to that I don't necessarily hear what you're saying. How is that not sound pareidolia? And sure. I would say, listen, first of all, number one, I am not claiming that every caption I put up is 100% correct. I'm giving you my best educated forensic audio expert type, you know, guess. Okay. And some of them are not responses. If the spirit doesn't use it, you're just going to get gibberish through. That's and that, you know, that way we're not going to get a false positive. But a lot of times
it's pretty interesting. The fact that you're actively using a bank of sounds instead of because the concept behind the original spirit box was scanning AM, FM, and sidebands.
Sure.
And just rolling through randomly and rolling back randomly, just like taking your old school analog tuner and just spinning the wheel and spinning it back. Right. But the fact that you are using a known quantitative means that you can actively separate. And no, you don't have to go through and get transcripts from 85 local stations to make sure that you aren't.
Sure.
To make sure that you aren't catching something else, you actively have the text of what was recorded for that sound bank.
Yeah, so, well, I know where the audio came from. Exactly. And it's been reversed. It's been chopped up. It's been slowed. So there's no way for, I mean, other than a random sounding word that sounds that way when you reverse human speech, if that can happen. Like you say the word say, and if you reverse that, that could sound like yes.
Bats,
you know?
Does sound like stab when you reverse it. It really does.
Sure, sure. So you may
I did
have
a ton of reverse recording for years.
But if it's random, just if it's a random word and it's not a direct response, then you don't maybe have anything there, right?
Yeah,
if it's a direct, if I say, yeah, okay, I'll give you a perfect example, and I have many of them, but I mean, this is a really simple example. I had a friend that had cancer. She was a follower of mine, really wonderful woman, Kimberly, and she would follow my work. And she reached out to me and she said, listen, I have cancer. She says, and I don't think I have very long. And when I pass, I would like for, you know, you to reach out to me for my family. And I said, I absolutely will do that for you, you know, and it'd be my honor. And, you know, and then months later, you know, her husband, who was just a really, you know, he's just a really nice guy and a great guy, not a big believer in a sense at the time or didn't follow my work, but her wishes were for him to do this. And so he reached out to me and told me that she had passed. And so he gave me a voicemail of her voice that she had left him. Okay. And I took that and did the Hope voice signature method, which is what I've been describing. Reverse, slow, and chop it up. And that's what I do. Right. And so I took that voice of hers and I did that. And then I fed that through my box and I asked for her. And so she came through, or I captured really powerful responses. I'm in the light. Love is light. I mean, she had some wonderful things to say to him. 2-3 word responses. That's all about that they can get through because of the way that it, you know, it works. And I sent it to him and he was like just blown away. He was so happy, but he still had his skepticism and I don't blame him. And he says, yeah, he goes, don't take offense to this, Josh. I just want to ask you though, can I ask you to ask her a validating question to know that it's really her?
Oh, absolutely. That would be the first thing I do too.
I mean, I've
given my wife my, you know, like, here's my turn of phrase. Yeah.
Right,
like
right.
If something happens, so, here's the Harry Houdini code word.
Right. And so sometimes those phrases don't always work out that well because there may not be a core memory or whatever. But if you ask about something that they really knew about that was very important to them, then they will be able to answer that. So anyway, he says, can you just ask her what the term muskrat meant? The term muskrat. And I said, okay, yeah. So I said, you want me to just say the word? And he goes, yeah, just ask her what that means to us. And that's a very open-ended thing right there, man. You know? So I got her back on and I asked, I said, you know, Chris wants to know what the term muskrat means. And she says, oh, the first response comes through and she goes, it's in the back of my head. And then I ask again and she says, we had to shave my head. Okay. So I tag those responses and then I send it to him. And he emails me back and he says, those were perfect responses.
Yeah.
He goes, when she was bedridden at the end, you know, she was worried that her hair in the back of her head would get matted. So she'd want me to check her head and check her hair, that her hair looked good. And I would joke with her and call her my little muskrat. And he said that we eventually had to shave her head.
Yeah.
So that was the 100% right answer. Detailed answer. It was perfect, right? But if I played that response for 10 people without the captions, how many of them do you think would have heard those words? You could hear head. You can hear maybe shave. You know what I'm saying? In a way that was very predominant. But other than that, you had to really kind of have that forensic audio expert ear in a way to really review it properly. And so, you know, the information is accurate. I mean, 90-something% of the time, it's very rare that it isn't. But can everyone hear those responses? No, they can't. So is it pareidolia? No, it's not.
Yeah, because it's not like you knew. It would be pareidolia if it's the fact of you had an expected result. You as the person have zero expected result with hearing head and shave.
Correct.
When asking the word muskrat.
Right. I heard a lot more than that, but now, I'm saying the average person might have only heard that.
Well,
right.
and that's what I'm saying, though, is even if you just heard those two things as a random person asking that question, it means nothing to you. Whereas if he had been the person to ask muskrat, he may have heard head and shave out of anything.
And that would have been enough for him.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So it really, really interesting concept. And that's why I wanted to get into that, because it, as opposed to a lot of just spirit boxes that are out there, this is a very proprietary process for setting up the sound banks that are being used. And I think, and, you know, as an audio and broadcast engineer, that was always a question of mine because I've been sitting right here beside me, I've got like ham radios and everything else. So I can get all kinds of whistles, beeps, boops, all kinds of things flying through the air. That when you start smashing them together and scanning across them, you can get some really weird sounding stuff. I've always had questions with standard spirit box.
You know what I would love to do? I'd love, because you're a sound engineer, you have that experience. I would love to maybe even, you know, pay you or whatever, have you create a bank for me.
Oh, sure.
That would be really cool. I would even, and what's cool about that is this. This is what's really cool about that. The free app on the phone. So the app that I created is free for people to get on the phone. It's the Hope Spirit Box. It's
super
on iOS.
Super cool app, by the way. Been tinkering around with it all weekend.
Oh, I'm really glad that you enjoy it, because this is cool. So it's free on iOS and it's free on Android, right? You can download it for free and you can use it. And, you know, there's an instructional video in the app and there's a longer one on my channel in the preview video on the main page of my channel. And so I would definitely check that out. And I'll give you one quick tip that will help anyone if they ever want to try it, is that if you scroll back down for a minute, you can see scroll back down to the picture of me holding the phone app. I think you just had it on the screen.
That one?
There you go. Yep.
Burp.
I mean, we are a little delayed, but there you go. Perfect. Okay. So you see right there, I have that's a good shot too, right there. Oh, that was fine. We're either one of those. That's fine. You see that little white circle? That's the noise gate, that little slide bar right there. Okay. That's, you would keep that close. You choose a bank, you know, you can pick a bank of a man, a woman, a kid, and whatever. And that's because you're trying to focus on one person. If you're focusing on one person, like your grandma or someone, a loved one, you want to spend a few minutes focusing on them in your mind, a memory of them, put on a song of theirs, spray a perfume, a cologne. Any of those things are going to help you really connect with the intuitive aspect. And that's important. Without the intuitive, this app and other apps don't really, or any device doesn't really work as well. You got to tune in a little bit to the intuitive. But anyway, when you do that and you choose your bank and you ask your question with the bank with the noise gate closed, you then open that gate for 1 second. So you would slide that thing open for one. I mean, the second you open it, you want to close it. That's the right amount of time, especially at first, to open it. A lot of people are opening it and leaving it open, and they're like, I'm just getting a bunch of gibberish. And I'm like, well, yeah.
Yeah,
because you're leaving the gate open.
Yeah, you aren't filtering out the other stuff.
Right. You want to ask them to speak within that 1-2 seconds of sound that's coming out, and they can do it. They can do it. They can't give you long, detailed, long sentences sometimes. Sometimes they can, though, and it's really amazing. But that's how this works. And so that program that app is for people for free on the phone. What we're about to release on the 1st of February is the tentative release date. Is the program. It's the Siri. It's the Rolls Royce of what I'm showing you in the app. It is literally, it's an online program that you get a login to. And you have the interface of this box, and you can play around with different settings, different algorithms as far as reverb goes. But what's cool about it is that you can upload a track. You can upload your own track. It's going to have preset banks already there, just like the app does, but you can upload your own track of whatever sound you want. And if you click a button when you're uploading it, it will take it and it will reverse it for you and slow it, and it will chop it up.
Oh,
so it will
cool.
It will turn if you take
it'll a go voicemail through your of a loved proprietary one, process.
It will do the Hope voice signature method for you, and then you'll have your own bank within your settings, and you can choose your bank. You can upload a picture of the loved one you're trying to reach to have on the screen to focus on. You can even turn on your webcam and focus on you as well, and have a picture of, a video of you and a picture of the loved one while you're reaching out. And it's really mind blowing. So it's going to be $5 a month.
Wow.
And you'll have access, and it's going to have also a radio box built into it. So a separate program that, yes, you can get false positives.
Yeah, like an HDSR, like an actual digital sideband radio.
Kind of. What it's going to do is it's going to be a radio box. It's going to skip stations, but it's going to be internet radio shoutcast type stations.
Okay.
Okay?
Gotcha.
So it's going to scan a bunch of different like old time stations and maybe a little Art Bell or whatever. And it will do that at a certain rate. But you can get false positives from that program, but that's more traditional. If that's what you're into, that you can check out that you can want to. Maybe if you like the traditional radio boxes more, you can try that and then switch over to the pro version of my app and use that,
I was going to say the results would be interesting to A/B simultaneously. And I think that is what any good researcher should be doing, is be using as many methods at the same time as possible.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Any session I do, I don't use one piece of equipment. Yeah. I always use two programs, or I end with a digital voice recorder. And the thing about it is that, in every session I'm doing, and I'm really proud to say I'm not doing it, so I can't say I'm proud of my, but I'm just really grateful. I should probably rephrase that and say I'm really grateful that almost in every session I do, and I'm using 2 to 3 pieces of equipment, the spirit is coming through all pieces of equipment. So I'll use one thing, I'll get them through some responses, I'll stop using that, I'll switch over to another piece of equipment, they'll start using that and giving me a continuation of the conversation we were just having on the previous piece of equipment. So that's really key.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow, that's pretty incredible. And you know, when you're talking about this kind of equipment, when you're talking about this kind of technology, to be able to leverage that and once again have the known quantitative that you do of the proprietary process.
Right.
Being able to put a track in, spit a track out, and know that you aren't picking up half a millisecond of a local broadcast station.
Correct.
Something like that.
Well, we're for the pro version that's really meant the app on the phone and the pro version, the HSB, that's really meant for not when you're trying to reach just a bunch of random spirit. So if you're trying to do that, you know, a PSB 7, the radio version box that I'm going to have in this program, that's going to be something that, you know, you would want to use for like a bunch of random spirits. If you're just, hey, who's out there? Who wants to talk with you tonight? You know, that's different. The HSB is not really built for that because you're choosing different banks that have similar sounds to how they sounded when they were alive, or that's the idea. And so people will say, well, yeah, but you don't know that it's them. Like, you don't know it's them, or you don't know if it's, you know, if you're giving a voice, then how are they able to, like, what if it's not, you know, you put a female up and what if it's a male? Well, that is a possibility. I'm not going to sit here and say it's impossible. There's a gender police over there that's going to prevent them from getting on. But there is a lot of, you know, the guides and helpers on the other side are really helping me. I mean, they really are helping. And so there is some semblance of normalcy. There is some kind of order that is happening, you know, and I find, you know, by using the person's actual voice or a voice similar, but with no words in it, it is like kind of like a phone number to them. It is like a signature stamp, that kind of really does help the connection.
Yeah.
Can I prove that every single, or that the soul that I'm meaning to reach is the actual one coming through? No, even with that case with Kimberly and the muskrat response, right? That was very personal. That was not something that was known publicly. That was literally between just those two people.
Yeah.
But how am I able to say 100% that it is exactly Kimberly? How am I able to say it is this person? I can't do it. But you know, I am intuitively connecting. So I'm seeing them. I am getting information from them, you know, psychically. And then I'm asking, and then the responses are very indicative of what they would say, not to mention, you know, information that they would only know. So that's about all we can do. You know, but I mean, that is a point. Some people ask me that and I say, yeah, no. I mean, they'll go, well, how do you know it's not a demon?
I was just about to say, cause we talk about that all the time on this show.
Sure.
It's one of those, you want to go around, do spirit boxing, things like that. Great. But for me, it's always a bit different. When you're asking specific questions, and it can be very dangerous to invite conversation.
It can be. And I've heard spirit. I mean, it can be in a way of this. This is what it is for me. I've been doing this 10 years. I've done a lot of different sessions. I've done in the field. I've done at home. Yeah. And I do a lot of my work at home now. I got 2 young kids and I have a family, you know, and I lead a very blessed life. I lead a very protected life. I feel very good. That doesn't mean I don't have my bad days. It doesn't mean that I don't have different moods sometimes, or, you know, things don't get to me. Yeah, I'm human and I have those things, but I feel really dialed in and protected most of the time with my higher power. That right there, Jesus Christ for me, that's my guy. It's not religious Jesus. It's the Gnostic, the loving, the one that accepts everyone and has no problems
the agape
with
Jesus.
Anyone. Yeah, right. You know, the right, the right type of love. And so I feel really good with that and protected. And I've gotten a lot of beautiful signs. The 99, I would say 90 something percent, higher than 95. The majority of what I capture is love filled type responses. It's messages of love to the loved ones that are asking for them. It's messages about God's light. The light, bringing it in, being grateful, helping people, doing good things. I mean, just being there and being of support. It's a lot of loving, supportive messages. And some people say, well, a demon can really pretend to be a loved one and can come and, and show that they have the light, like, and act like they have the light. Well, guess what? If that's the case. You're screwed then.
You're in trouble to begin with.
You're in trouble to begin with. Forget about guess what? Your enemy is well better equipped than you are.
Yeah.
If that's the reality, but I don't believe that necessarily. I'm not saying that a demon can't pretend to be something or try to be whatever. But when you are if you're a loosey-goosey that doesn't believe in anything, doesn't believe in God or anything, and you're kind of a negative person, okay, and then you want to do this kind of stuff, then God help you.
You're attracting that to begin with.
You are an open field. I don't know what to say. It's open season on you. I don't know what to say. Yeah. But if you are a good person and you are actively trying to be a better person and trying to connect with your higher power and trying to do good to others – And your intention, your heart is in the right place. That doesn't mean you will never get some negative a-hole that will try to come through and say something negative. But you will be protected and you will be okay. You are stronger than the dark side. You don't realize it because people walk around. People have keys to a freaking Lamborghini and they think they're driving a Honda. They don't know what the features are on their vehicle. They do not know. And
that's
so
a great way to put it.
Yeah, man. You know, there's so many things that people don't ever touch. Yes. You know, meditation is something that should be taught early on. Everyone should be doing it like they're brushing their teeth and eating, okay? But how many people literally meditate? Probably 10% of this world meditates, okay? I'm going to be honest. I mean, maybe more in the East, you know, in India and in, you know, Asia and stuff. But oh, so that is important. But, you know, those are all things that really help us and when we're dealing with this stuff. So when people ask me about the negativity that can come through, I say, listen, if you think turning on the app and asking for grandma and maybe some, you know, wanderer or whatever, some, you know, negative guy comes through and says something to you. If you think that they have the power to take over your soul now, then you probably shouldn't be using the app at all.
Yeah.
And you probably, you know, but I'm going to say that, you know, if you make a post on Facebook, you're going to get 10 comments, let's say. 9 of them are positive and one old crusty guy that got through decides to leave a negative trolley kind of comment. That's about the extent of what you're capturing in, you know, through the box. So you block and delete him, right?
Yeah.
And that's what you would do with anyone else. You know, so that's really what it is.
Well,
that's my opinion.
And that was one of the hardball questions I was going to ask because I've got to ask it.
Ask any of them, please.
Because, sure. It's definitely out there and it's a question that I'm sure many people ask you. Now, one that maybe a lot of people don't ask, is there any AI present in your software? Because of course, all of, let's see, what was it? 2015, Adobe released its software, which changed Hollywood contracts, where with 20 minutes of audio, you can simulate anybody's voice. I just posted about a week ago, Microsoft's new AI can do it with 3 seconds of audio.
Just
assuring the fact that you are not using any kind of hidden AIs in your software or anything like that to capture grandma's voice.
No.
And make something sound like grandma.
You have – no. There's no, because the banks already have the tone to them. You can change the tone within the program, the pitch of the voice. If you want to make it a little lower, a little higher, you can do that. But no. Those banks – you know, anyone can test
– I mean for the pro version where you can throw in a clip of somebody.
No, they – no. So – once you log in and you are in your interface of it, that's your thing. And then, there's no AI built in to be responsive to you. There's a voice activation system that if you turn on the voice activation thing, it's a button that you can hit where you don't have to open the gate. You can just hit that button and it will listen for your voice. And when you're done speaking, it will open the gate for you.
Oh,
that's it. That's
I like
it.
That.
That automates the process a little bit more. But that's the only thing that's like, you know what I'm saying?
Well, even turning the gate up and down in intervals would be fantastic, where there's literally a noise gate level for them to ride and to find.
What do you mean? Hold on. What do you mean? I want to understand that.
Basically, imagine the fact of slowly turning up the noise gate and slowly turning down the noise gate. In intervals.
Well,
so instead of a hard cut off, cut on.
Well, no, I mean, that's the thing. It's supposed to be, I mean, when you open that gate, you're supposed to slide it open and slide it closed. So you're going to get the ascending and the descending sound that you're going to get from when you're opening, you know, so the sound's going to, you know, it's going to come in and then it's going to trail off, you know, eventually. But when you do the voice activation, if you don't want to open the gate yourself and you want it to be, you know, automated, it's still going to open it in a way that it's going to be.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. It's not going to be.
I thought it was just
hard
on off.
No. And then you can do an auto too, where you can just kind of hit that and then the program will just randomly open the gate like at different times.
Wow.
So it's kind of like a spirit box in a way where you can do that. But the spirit then has to be really tuned into the device on the other side where it's looking for the sound that's coming out. I don't know what it looks like to them on the other side. From what I've heard through the responses, it sounds like there is some kind of piece of equipment on the other side. I know that sounds kooky.
I don't know. I don't know that it sounds that kooky.
They talk about, you know, pushing a button or something. I've heard them talk about that before. Now, maybe they're talking to me about what I'm doing, but it sounds like they're mentioning it. They sounds like they're trying to guide my hand at times. There's different things. So they're manipulating it. And I'll put my HSB Pro, my laptop with the program on it, and then I'll put my physical box next to it. And I'll ask for a spirit and I'll say, okay, I'm going to ask for you. I'm going to ask you 10 questions, 5 on the pro computer program and 5 on the hard box. And it's really cool to see. And they use both. They use both in that time. And that's how I conduct my group sessions. I mean, 20 people, I ask 5 questions each for each person. And I'll say, okay, I'm going to ask you 2 or 3 on the pro and 2 or 3 on the box. And some prefer the box over the pro, but the majority of them use the pro over the box.
Wow.
So I think there's something to it that's easy for them or easier in a way. But I think that they're all trying – I feel like they're trying to practice using the pro version because these are all people's loved ones that I'm asking for.
Yeah.
And I think what they're doing, and they keep saying, use the app. You know, they keep saying that. They'll say it all the time. And my thought is now is that that box that I have is something that most people aren't going to build.
Yeah.
They're not sold. And they cost upwards of a few $1,000s when you add all the parts to them.
Yeah.
But here we go. For $5 a month, now you can use a program that has it all kind of built into it and even more. So I feel like they're like, no, we need to practice with the computer program because that's what our loved one's going to eventually get.
It is a whole lot more accessible because once you say, and granted, you know, there are don't get me wrong. There are cheap ambient thermometers out there, too. If you'd like one with real lab grade results, you're going to be spending $500-$600.
Correct.
You know, right. No different than going out and buying proper microphones for something.
Right.
They're expensive. To know that this software will make available this technology at the cost of $60 a year.
Right.
For paranormal researchers, for groups, for even for individuals wanting to carry out sessions for loved ones.
And you know what's
phenomenally
cool about it too?
Accessible.
And you know what's even better is this. As I talked to you earlier about, we talked about the four stages of conducting yeah. sessions. You know, the review process, like I said, is so important that I built that into the program as well. So when you're doing a session, you can record on your external camera if you want, which is what I normally do. But when you are a woman at home by yourself or whatever, or a person that doesn't have all this equipment, you can turn on everything within the program and you can record within the program. And when you record, it will save your recordings. You can go to the recordings. You can watch them. If you can screen capture, or you can yeah. just record the audio. And then when you hear something, you could slow it down. You can go back with the waveform and listen over and over again and really review the audio. And then you can caption it, put a caption to it, and you can export the clip.
That's great.
Dude, you can literally conduct a session and have everything, you know, recorded, caption it, and export your clips and share them, in no time, if you capture something.
Can you real-time time mark it?
So when you're recording and you – okay, so when
where,
you
where
are –
where it would basically make a skip point?
Well, what you would do is – okay – the way that the program is built, so it's easy for you to export and review, you don't want to record 10 minutes worth of a session. What you want to record is 10 1-minute clips of you asking individual questions.
Gotcha.
That's really the best way to do it, because okay. now you don't have to go through 10 minutes worth of straight footage. Like yeah. you just said, you got to remember where the heck it was said and whatever. Now you would – it's really meant for you to hit record,
well, it
ask
really
one
does.
Question.
It hones then, down the review process in the end.
Oh, yeah. Oh, hugely. Yeah. And now, you know, once you record and you ask one question and then you stop – you know, you get the response that comes out, the sound comes out, you stop recording, you don't even have to – you can hit quick review, where there's a quick review button, and you can play it right then and there, right back.
Wow.
So if you don't hear the response in real time, which the majority of you don't, you're going to hear it a second after you record it, because it's accessible to you right then and there, right after recording it.
Wow.
You know?
That's
yeah.
cool. That's
oh,
cool.
yeah. Because now you can have a much better chance at having a real-time conversation.
Yeah.
You know, so yeah, I'm like stoked, man. I'm really stoked, because this is like, this isn't some thing that, you know, someone sells because they created it because they thought that it would be a good idea. It's something that I created because I needed to use it.
Well, yeah. And it's not just no offense to a lot of spirit boxes out there. It's not just a repackaged random scanner.
Oh, I know. No,
which is literally what most of them are.
No, I'm actually just throwing one of those in for free.
Yeah. And it's cool. Like, you can find some stuff. Don't get me wrong, but you got to be willing to throw 98% away.
Yeah, no, right. Exactly.
As opposed to this process where it is much more amenable to a repeatable result.
Oh, yeah. Yep. So. And so, you know, the idea is to open up the program and to start out with, you know, after you do your little, you know, prayer and your meditation, your intent and your setup, you know, you can turn on the radio box portion of the program and just kind of open it up and let any of your guides say something, or if you want to and say that you're going to connect to your loved one and see if there's any kind of responses that come through on their own without you opening the gate and scanning different radio. You may get some false positives in that part of the program. But then when you feel like you're getting something or that you feel like you're intuitively connecting to your loved one, then stop the radio box and move over to the pro. Pick a bank that's similar to your loved one or upload one that will it will mangle for you. And then go to asking about 5 or 6, maybe 10 individually recorded questions. And that is a very nice session, you know?
Wow. Wow. Incredible, man. Yeah. I can't wait for this software to come out. I can't wait to get it. I have thoroughly once again enjoyed my time that I've spent with the app. It is super fun. I want to thank you for your time tonight, Joshua. I'd love to have you, on.
Man. You're a great
again
interviewer.
And again, the research that you're doing is fantastic, and the technology that you are helping develop, I think is really forward looking as far as lab type repeatable result when it comes to EVP.
Yeah, I think so, man. I think this is going to be like the true soul phone. I think it's really going to be something that people are going to be able to use, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Man, thank you so much for coming on. Before we let you go, time for shameless self-promotion. Let everybody know where they can go to register for your upcoming event
in
Georgia, where they can go to eagerly await the release of HSB Pro, and where they can go to pick up the Spirit Box as we speak.
Right. So, yeah, hopeparanormal.com. Hopeparanormal.com is the website, and you can find all things hope related there. You can get my book or, you know, order it through the link to Amazon. You can get the app, iOS and Android for free. The event is coming up. I'm doing a giveaway. You can get day passes or weekend passes, but I'm also giving away 2 passes, and you can enter by liking, you know, there's on my Facebook page. So, you know, all of that is there. And then subscribe to the mailing list if you want, if anyone wants to, because that's where I give updates on what's coming out, like the pro version when it's coming out. So, yeah, hopeparanormal.com. That's where to go.
Fantastic. Well, once again, thank you so much for your time. It's been a great conversation tonight. I have thoroughly enjoyed our time together. You're welcome back again and again and again to discuss this technology and research that is ongoing for you.
Thank you, man. Thanks, Chris.
Absolutely. I'm going to go ahead and let you go as I peel off to commercial break.
You got it.
And thank you so much for your time. I greatly appreciate it.
All right, man. God bless. God bless. All right.
Take care.
Thanks.
While you are online, everybody, checking out everything from Hope Paranormal and Joshua Lewis at hopeparanormal.com, make sure to stop on by Curious Realm. Curious Realm is the website. That is where you can find all of our episodes. That's where you can find the Knowledge Vault. That's where you can find our new rebuilt store, where you can go and buy Curious Realm gear as well as books, programs, all kinds of things by our guests. When we come back from this commercial break, everybody, we will be joined by, geez, I just forgot our second guest. How do you do that, Chris? we will be joined by the amazing, Jessica Gerlach. So sorry, Jessica. I have known you for years and I can't believe that I just blanked on that. We'll be talking with Jessica Gerlach about the world of hypnotherapy, the process of hypnotherapy. Can you be hypnotized? If you think you can't, you may be in for a surprise, folks. We'll be coming up with that right after this break. With the rise in attention to the health benefits of cannabis and cannabinoids, including CBD, True Hemp Science has become one of the premier providers of full-spectrum CBD and CBD-related products. Using a proprietary spagyric process, True Hemp Science extracts maximum benefit from the whole hemp plant. Buds, leaves, stems, seeds, even roots. Every part of the plant is used and then reused to formulate a rich, complex profile of CBD, CBD derivatives, and terpenes guaranteed to provide the relief and benefits you need daily. Visit TrueHempScience.com to experience the best CBD oils, edibles, and topicals on the market today. And use code CURIOUS7 to save 7% off your entire purchase of $50 or more and get 2 25-milligram CBD cookies or brownies free. That website again is TrueHempScience.com and the code is CURIOUS7. Curious Realm Podcast is your source for the latest and greatest news and events in the world of the paranormal, esoteric, and forbidden knowledge. And there's no better way to spark the conversation than with items from the Curious Realm store. Choose from fan favorites like hoodies, mouse pads, coffee mugs, and more. Buy books and items from your favorite Curious Realm guests. Get your hands on the latest gear for paranormal investigations and experiments we discuss on the show. Open your web browser and stop on by the Curious Realm store at CuriousRealm.com/store to buy the latest Curious Realm wear and out-of-this-world gifts for yourself, your family, or a mind that you want to open. That website again is CuriousRealm.com/store. Have you considered starting a podcast? Looking for a way to make your business a voice of authority in an industry? Then Podcast Cadet is the solution for you. Whether starting a podcast for yourself, your brand, business, school, church, or just plain fun, Podcast Cadet is here to help you navigate the waters of the podcast industry. Specializing in one-on-one consultation and training with industry professionals in fields ranging from podcast technology and editing to distribution, monetization, and even social media strategies. Podcast Cadet tailors their services to the specific needs of you and your podcast. Do you already have a podcast and trying to find ways to engage and grow your audience? Sign up for your Podcast Cadet audit today and let us help you explore new and exciting ways to leverage your content and elevate your podcast brand to whole new levels. From consultation and workshops to affordable podcast production and maintenance packages, Podcast Cadet is your one-stop shop for everything podcast-related on the internet. Visit PodcastCadet.com today to sign up for your consultation or training and use code CURIOUS20 to save 20% off your entire purchase. That website, again, is PodcastCadet.com. Hello, everybody, and welcome back from commercial break. Thank you so much to all of our sponsors, especially WebWorks Wireless, for helping make all of our live streams possible. Without WebWorks Wireless, we would not have our website live stream every week. So thank you so much to those guys. If you're looking for a web solution for your home out in the country, trailer, camp, what have you, even on the go streaming, stop on by and check them out. WebWorks Wireless is the website. Our guest in this segment is the amazing Jessica Gerlach Hurd. She is a hypnotherapist. She is a neurolinguistic programmer. She is a life coach, all kinds of things. We will be talking with her about the world of hypnotherapy. What is neurolinguistic programming and how these things can help us better our life? Welcome back to the show. It's been a very long time. Jessica, how are you doing?
Hi, Chris. Thanks for having me. It has been a while. It's my pleasure. I'm good. How are you?
Doing well. Doing well. A little beleaguered right now after, as I told you, after 2 weeks with my FMP family on the road, it's been pretty wild. So glad to be back in my home studio, to say the least, and glad to be back home. Let's go ahead and start at the beginning, Jessica. How is it that you came to be introduced to hypnotherapy, and how did you begin studying it?
My dad was actually a teacher, a trainer of hypnotherapy and NLP, and he got me interested in this back in 2010. He passed away a year and a half ago, which obviously is still devastating today, but I feel like I'm definitely carrying on part of his legacy. So we've really had that in common. We were always both very interested in human behavior and psychology and healing and power of the mind. So it was my dad.
And, you know, it's interesting that someone like your father is who inspired you to get into hypnotherapy. You hear that a lot when it comes to therapy, when it comes to other fields like teaching, but hypnotherapy in and of itself is something that can be a little nebulous and I think highly misunderstood by the average person. How long was it before you actively understood exactly what it is that your father did with clients?
I mean, I feel like he had been telling me about it for years before I became certified and did the training course myself. And he taught me so much that by the time I did take the course, I feel that I did have a pretty deep understanding of what it was. But it did take me some time to grasp it. But when I realized that our beliefs create our reality and that certain ways that we can speak to others or speak to ourselves can change the course of, you know, destiny or the reality that we experience, it really clicked for me.
Well, and here recently we have had quite a few episodes on, we talked with Anne Celine, practicing Wiccan, about the concept of manifestation. The idea of being able to bring things about in your life, whether you want to call that spell casting, whether you want to call it, it's interesting, as we said in that conversation with her, how you could tune into Joel Osteen on a Sunday morning. And he's basically talking about the same thing that people were talking about in 1932 when they were talking about occult practices and manifestation. Absolutely. And bringing things into your life.
Absolutely.
And it's just strange to kind of see that wheel turn and see it flipped on itself, where now that is the mainstay of modern preachers
is
the idea of manifesting things in your life and bringing about the blessings. And it's really been interesting to see the eyes of physics turn that way since What the Bleep Do We Know came out in the early 2000s.
I remember it so well.
I think that before we really get into hypnotherapy and how that can help us with manifestation, I think that really a key part to talk about is the NLP, the neurolinguistic programming, because I think that that is really the subtlety of everyday hypnosis. And don't get me wrong, folks. It's not like you're like weaving a spell on people around you to make them do what you want to do. However, in the way, in the tone in which you present things, in the way in which you word things, you can definitely make somebody a whole lot more amenable to the idea that you are presenting.
Absolutely. And there's certain strategies and wording that you can use, and tonality, of course. I mean, all of these things that can be influential, right? Mm. So, you know, with NLP, we don't need to know how the person got to where they were or the whys, yeah. right? We can just yeah. bypass all that and use strategies to rewire the brain. One of my favorite NLP strategies that I will use in a hypnotherapy session is something called like a physical anchor. So we take the client through a process of visualization. And once we get them to the emotion that they would prefer to feel, as opposed to the ones that they've just released in the session, when we get them in that ideal state, we can do something called, you know, a physical anchor. We can create a physical anchor, which could be anything from touching your thumb to your index finger and tapping back into that positive emotion after the session is over. So you create the anchor during the session, and then the subconscious mind knows that anytime you do this movement again, you're to tap back into those emotions. And it's highly effective and it's really amazing. For example, one that we can use for anxiety is having them feel the anxiety, whether that's in their stomach or their chest, wherever the client feels that, and feel it moving out of their body, well, through their arm, actually, and holding a tight fist. And once it gets to the hand, releasing it. And then they can do that at any point after the session. So they can basically continue releasing their anxiety.
Now, would that be a subliminal cue for them, or would that be a fully woke cue for them? Would that be something that they, whenever the anxious thing happens, that their hand unclenches subconsciously, like they are unaware of it?
It can be both. I think that they may find themselves just doing it naturally because that's what the subconscious can, you know, the subconscious mind is basically controlling 95% or more of what we do. So it can become like a second nature situation. Well, they'll just end up doing that. Others may have to consciously think about, okay, I'm feeling the anxiety, tap back into what I was told to do to release it. So it could take a little bit of time, but then I would say after a certain amount of time passes, it would just become a second nature movement that they'll do to relieve.
Now, let's step back for a second and explore the idea of the subconscious only controlling 5% of your actions, because I think that that is a big misconception with a lot of people. I was actively just reading a huge, fantastic study on intentionality and free will, and even the concept and the misconception of free will. So to think that the subconscious is only driving 5% when you look at how we autonomically roll through the world.
Well, it's actually 95% or more.
Oh,
the subconscious controls 95% or more of what we do and how we feel and how we react to things. And about 5% or less is conscious. So yeah, that's why it's so important when we're trying to change behaviors to deal with the subconscious mind and do the work there. And I'll give you the perfect example.
Please.
New Year's will hit, right? And everybody's like, I'm going back to the gym. I'm going to get in shape this year. Well, that's all great, but they'll end up going for maybe a month, maybe two, and then back to the same patterns. It's because they haven't done the work on a subconscious level. They consciously chose to go back to the gym, to work out, to make the changes. But the program that's running things, the majority, a very high majority of your, you know, what's running everything, didn't have any, you know, work done. So people end up falling right back into those same patterns because it's only 5%, the conscious mind.
Now, how much of that 95% of subconscious that is ultimately ruling our decisions? And that's basically what this study showed as well, was that 95% of the time our decisions made up. And it's made up far before we ever come to the table.
Absolutely.
Is that nature or is that nurture? Is that a combination of the two?
I think it is a combination of the two, but I think that it's more so a nurture situation, especially when you take into consideration that most of our subconscious programming, most, not all, is pretty well established before the age of 9. So those early crucial years really establish who we are in a sense and the way that we react to life. And the interesting thing about the subconscious mind is that it always is looking for ways to prove to itself that its program is true and to protect you. But what can happen is it's so protective of you that it can hold you back from ways to thrive as well. So just as the subconscious mind can become reprogrammed for negativity based on, you know, trauma or neglect or anything difficult that we go through, you know, the good news is that it can be rewired for positivity and, you know, thriving and life enhancement and all that. So yeah, I think that it's mostly nurture, but I'm sure there are some neuro situations, you know, that we could be born with that can make us prone to worry, anxiety, depression, you know, things like that as well. So I would say a combination, but in my opinion, more nurture.
Well, and, you know, especially whenever you're talking the negative self-talk of the West. Now, granted, there's negativity that abounds, especially cultural negativity that abounds, cultural rules of shaming, all kinds of things the whole world over that lead to very complex issues. How do you begin with neurolinguistic programming to, I guess, kind of backstep some of that and get somebody to a point of positive self-talk and away from the negative, the negativity that we are prone to have toward ourselves?
I think the biggest issue, from what I can see and what I feel, is that there's a lack of understanding and acceptance that our thoughts and our self-talk actually do create our reality. I feel like if people really knew and understood how our thoughts and our beliefs created our life and our reality and our experience, they would change that. And I think that it's just a matter of more education being needed on that. You know, I have people that make fun of, you know, vibration or energy or, you know, thoughts creating reality. Like, they think it's funny. They think it's like foo-foo. They think it's a joke, you know?
Well,
and this is because they lack an understanding of quantum physics.
Well, and like I said at the beginning of the conversation, these are things that when I had Anne Celine on over my left shoulder, there is my esoteric library. And I pulled down The Invisible Force from like 1932 that was talking about this same concept and the idea of manifestation and bringing things about in the world around you. And once again, this is now the territory of religion
and absolute
and theological conversation in religions.
I think it's always been there. It just wasn't as known, because Jesus even said in the Bible, I didn't heal you. Your faith has healed you.
Yeah.
So this is a perfect example. I just don't know if people really got it, before. And now it's become a pretty mainstream idea, you know, manifestation. And yeah. like you said, even these religious leaders are using it. It's become more common. I still, there's a high level of misconception and a lack of understanding and education on it fully.
Let's explore that for a second, because like our previous guest was discussing, the idea of a lot of the philanderers out there, a lot of the people who are misusing title, misusing concept for self-aggrandizement or for monetary gain, are actually harming and hurting this field of study, and actually harming and hurting, well, even the cause of manifestation for the right reasons.
Right. I think that is very, very common actually right now as well. Mm. I think that it's, you know, to do this type of work as ethically as possible, you really want it to be about empowering the client. You know, it's not about you having control over them. It's about helping them to realize their own power. And that's really the most ethical approach I feel that can be taken with doing this type of work.
Now, especially whenever you're talking hypnotherapy, it's a delicate place. I myself, probably about a year ago almost, was put through a hypnotherapy session that I actively aired live on air. It was a past life regression. Very, very interesting experience for me. Now, granted, I was unable to find any traumas or anything like that. We were going, instead of for personal trauma or anything, we were going much more for longevity and other things. But how long does it normally take with a client before they start seeing a result as far as getting to the point of finding personal trauma, which, as you're saying, can be the root of so many problems in life?
It's so different from person to person. You know, it just depends on how in touch they are with that part of themselves. Some of them know that there's trauma and they can't remember it, so we have to take them back to childhood. Mm-hmm. And I've had clients become hysterical during a session, and sometimes they don't even know why, and sometimes they realize it later. Some of them will have a recollection during the session. It really varies from person to person and, you know, circumstance to circumstance. But some clients need repetitive sessions for that. Some just need one.
Yeah.
But they have to be dedicated to doing the work. I mean, you know, it's something that, you know, you have to really want to do. That's another misconception about hypnotherapy as well, is that you're not in a, you know, a state of hypnosis does not mean that you're going to do anything that you're morally or ethically not okay with.
Yeah.
You know, on a subconscious level, which, as we just said, controls 95% or more of, you know, so there's a big misconception about that in particular, that you can hypnotize anybody. No, the participant has to be willing. Yeah. They have to be morally and ethically okay with it as well. So if they want to.
Now, mm-hmm. granted, that's we have quite an audience of TIs, all kinds of things. That is not to preclude the fact that, like, yes, absolutely, a Manchurian candidate could be made. But you have to psychologically break somebody to make that happen.
So there's a difference between subliminal messaging and hypnotherapy, too.
Yes.
So there is a distinction there, you know.
let's make that distinction for the audience, just so that they understand. Because absolutely, I use binaural beats in the music that I make. I have used subliminal messages in music that I make, all kinds of things. That is far different than a hypnotherapy session.
It is. I would say this. I do use binaural beats when I do hypnotherapy recordings, because obviously we know that frequency has a physiological response, and that's a positive thing when we're trying to get someone to relax, but they're there and willing to relax. So we're not trying to control anyone per se, but to give them as much assistance as possible from every, you know, aspect that we can. So, you know, when it comes to binaural beats, that's a really great way to help someone relax in a session who struggles with anxiety or even depression, because by listening to binaural beats, you can change your whole mood. So that in combination with the session itself and the wording and the visualization process and journey that we take the client on is actually highly effective. But, you know, we also know that, I don't know if you can, you know, put this information out there or whatever, but, you know, we do know that subliminal messaging is also used in different ways, you know, on TV and, you know.
we wouldn't have laws against it if it wasn't used that way at one point. And believe me, folks, we have laws against it. I want to say one of the last times it was used was actually during the sign off. I know you grew up here in the States, Jessica. If you grew up anywhere before 1990, the age of 24-hour news cycle, and 24-hour broadcasting, like TV cut off for like 8 hours a day from like,
I was born in 81, so yeah.
Yeah, like you remember it like midnight. It went to a test tone. Like the American anthem played, you know, all that kind of stuff. And yes, there was a little while that there was a patriotic message subliminally put under that.
Indeed, even in school every morning, Pledge of Allegiance, and then there was the political songs or whatever you want to call them were played.
In Houston, it was the Houston Oilers song. We sang that every Monday after the Pledge of Allegiance. Tell me that wasn't indoctrination to football. Not even joking. Like every elementary school I knew. Crazy. But that is the difference between subliminal and hypnosis. Subliminal is something that is put underneath the undercurrent of ordinary everyday. Whereas hypnosis is a dedicated, focused session.
It's intentional. Absolutely. Yes.
Now, let's backtrack real quick to the idea of somebody being willing. How frequently do you find somebody that, comes to you, wants to be hypnotized, but has problems getting there?
So we don't know that until we do a session.
Oh, actually. Sure. Yeah, absolutely.
Some people will say, well, you know, what can I expect after the first session? And I usually have to say, well, I really don't exactly know because everybody's different. We can go ahead and, you know, like I said, some people have tremendous results with just one session.
Yeah.
And other people have tremendous results with two or three. Sometimes they need more. So I'm personally, and I've seen the best results with repetitive reinforcement to the subconscious mind. And in those cases, I highly recommend, you know, a recording. So I write the session for the client the same as I would if I was doing a live session. Mm-hmm. But recording allows them to listen to that session as many times a day as they need to when they wake up in the morning. It's like flooding your consciousness and your subconscious mind with positive, healthy, life-enhancing, you know, information. And that's where we see it. It's almost like, you know, faking it until you make it in a way. because you're just constantly telling yourself that you're already there. And the visualization process in hypnotherapy is really remarkable, because I'll typically have a client merge with their ideal self at the end of the session. But throughout the session, I get them to really visualize everything they want to release. And then I have them watch that disintegrate or evaporate or whatever, right? And then I'll have them really get very clear on everything that they want to feel, everything that they want to see in their life, within themselves. And at the end, towards the end of the session, I'll create that physical anchor that we were talking about earlier. And then I'll have them merge with their ideal self, so that they feel that they've just stepped into the new them. And when you go through that process every day, it's really transformative. It's really, really incredible.
Well, and let's explore real quick the idea of stripping these, I guess really getting to the point of stripping the ego away to find the trauma to release to begin with. How do you go about, I guess, A, finding the trauma within somebody, and B, exposing them to that post-session? Because there's, I mean, I assume the fact that even though you have given them a coping mechanism and you're going to continue to give them a subliminal coping mechanism, that when you bring them out, you're going to have to be like, well, okay, so here's what we found.
So normally the client will be aware of everything. So you're not, you know, the hypnotic state, you still have awarenesses. I mean, you did it, so maybe it was the same for you. Some people do fall asleep, which is a different situation, but most people still have awarenesses, but they're like in that in-between state. So if a trauma comes up, or okay, let me put it like this. If we know that a person had a childhood trauma, but they can't remember all of the details, I'll take them through a journey, a visualization, and begin to ask them what they see around them. What colors are there? How many chairs are in the room? Are there windows? Are there people? What do their voices sound like? Are there any accents? Do they sound like other children? Do they sound like adults? And this is where we start to get them to place themselves back at the event and get them to feel, smell, taste, and touch every single thing that comes to mind when we bring them back. And that's how we begin to pull those memories back up, if that answers your question.
Sure, sure. And, you know, the reason I ask is because, once again, I've been through the regressive form of hypnosis. And I recalled some of it. I was definitely there. I was definitely present. Like, I responded to questions. But there were some things that I definitely did not fully recall from my session.
Right. And that can happen. And sometimes those memories can come out later, even days later, weeks later, or months later after a session. But sometimes it requires more than one. And I'm just remembering that part of your previous question was, how do you pull the trauma out? And once they remember it, how do you then, you know, go back and work on this? Yeah. So what I can do is give you an example. If somebody has a childhood trauma, let's say there was abuse. They couldn't remember all of it because our subconscious mind protects us. So sometimes it makes us forget, right? Even though it's stored in the subconscious, but consciously we don't remember everything. So what we need to do once the trauma is, you know, or has resurfaced, even if it's partial, we can take you back to that childlike state where, so a child is obviously vulnerable and scared and very needing of, you know, comfort and nurturing and affection and safety. And what we want to do then is get them to relook at the person who abused them or the abuse or the situation itself as an empowered adult instead of that vulnerable child. And again, this is done through a process of, you know, visualization, empowerment, and we get them to even look at their abuser as, you know, a vile, disgusting human, obviously, but also in a way that, you know, you almost look at them with disgust instead of fear. It sounds strange, but it's very effective. And this helps to empower.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
Well, and I think more importantly, it's the fact of, because sadly, so many victims, period, live in a state of constant Stockholm syndrome. Mm-hmm. Where they have identified with their abuser, and they have identified with their abuser to the fact that they cannot see themselves as existing without the abuse.
Trauma bond. Yes.
And that leads to a lot of issues in life. That can lead to addictions. That can lead to bad relationship after bad relationship, because the only thing you know to be complete is that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I that's so, so common, you know, and I'm a big believer, and I've seen a lot of people struggle with addiction because of unhealed trauma and a lack of connection, you know?
Well,
and I've heard a lot of recovering addicts.
Yeah. Well, let's get into that real quick, because that is a lot of what you're working on right now. Specifically is working with women in that way, working with victims and trying to help make them whole human beings again.
Absolutely. And it's actually rediscovering their wholeness. I would phrase it like that, because we're all whole and complete, but we don't always realize that, or other people have made us not feel that way. So when we realize that, and we can work on releasing and healing and work towards our empowerment, you know, we start treating ourselves better. We start taking care of our mental health. We start having stronger boundaries, you know, everything just gets better from there.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, and you know, I am very focused on women who are recovering from things like abuse or addiction or anything to do with their healing or empowerment, because I feel like women naturally, and I'm not saying men don't do this too, but I know that there's a lot of women who do a lot of the emotional labor in many, many relationships. They feel responsible, you know, and we are natural nurturers. So there's a lot of struggle there. And
well, I think that unfortunately also, societally, especially here in the West, women are sold a bad bill of goods. They are really sold on the idea. And even if you go back and look, like I try to explain to people all the time, like, hey, man, caveat those Disney princesses for your daughter. Because let's start paying real close attention to some of the real creeper things that go on with those princes. Like, yo, wait a minute. She's sleeping, man.
Yes.
You're just gonna roll up and give her a long enchanted kiss while she's asleep, and she's supposed to be okay with that,
right?
She's supposed to be cool with that. Like, that's what you're supposed to be looking for. And that is like really a very subtle thing to think about. The fact that, like, from the get-go, This is the concept of love and completeness that we are giving people. Mm-hmm. That when you look at it, like I've told people for years, one of the most unhealthy movies in the world, Jerry Maguire. Good Lord, I don't care how feel good it is, Jack. Like, that is one of the worst. Like, You Complete Me is one of the worst actual relationship things that you could ever get. Because you should, like, you are putting so much on that other person. Why are you not a complete and whole human being before you come to the table?
That's what I tell clients that I do the transformational life coaching and even hypnotherapy. Like, when you realize that you're already whole and complete on your own, you won't look for someone to fill the void. You'll look for a partner who can match how you already feel about yourself.
Yes. Yes. And you know, you've recently experienced that, correct, Jessica?
In which way?
Well, in finding the partner.
Oh, absolutely.
When you find the right partner, they just lock in and move forward. Yeah.
And interestingly enough, he and I both were on a journey of healing and self-work and becoming whole and complete on our own. And boom, we attracted each other because I feel that's why we attracted each other. And he does too. Like it was just, we gravitated towards each other because we were on a similar healing journey. You know, he had a ton of trauma in his past. So have I, you know?
Sure.
And we did a lot of self work and I feel like, you know, yes. I agree with that.
Absolutely. And, you know, it's the old concept of when the student is ready, the master appears. And when the student is ready, the master disappears.
I just saw that quote like 2 days ago. Crazy.
A lot of people forget that second part, that when the student is ready, the master disappears. you have to be ready for that. And I think that. Let's kind of start exploring that in this second part here, Jessica. The idea of no longer needing Jessica, because I think that we get caught up in the idea with therapy, and don't get me wrong, therapy is a beautiful, amazing thing, period. You are supposed to work to the point that you no longer need to go to your therapist.
Yes, I agree with that. Although I think that we're all always healing.
Sure.
But when we learn how to self-heal, that's where the real empowerment comes in. So I stopped working with, you know, my experts and therapists and all that. But I did really need that at the time. Yeah. But then they empowered me, which is what I do with other people now. And when you realize that you do have the power to heal yourself, yes, that's a beautiful place to be. So, but do I think that we finish healing altogether at some point? Well, I think there's always some more healing to do in other areas, but the key I think is in this learning how to heal ourselves. And we have that ability.
Oh, most definitely. And especially the ability to, once again, like you said, continually work on ourselves. The work is never done. That's literally the old concept of the unfinished pyramid. And and the wisdom of that is the fact of the pyramid is never finished. It's never complete. Our temple personally is never complete because we're supposed to always question. We're always supposed to wonder why. We're always supposed to move on to the next level.
Yep. Expand, grow, evolve. There's always more to learn. So it's an amazing journey when you're consciously and subconsciously on it.
Well, and how do people, I guess, begin that journey, Jessica? What are the first steps to, I guess, begin to free themselves neurolinguistically on a daily basis?
I think that one of my favorite approaches and one of the approaches that I always suggest to my clients, because I find it to be very effective, is to acknowledge what it taught you. So it's not about denying any parts of yourself or being all positive or love and light all the time. Like, that's not, you know, healthy. We have to acknowledge, why do we feel crappy? Why do we feel lower vibrational? Why do we feel depressed, anxious, angry? And then we need to ask ourselves, what are those emotions teaching me? And a lot of times, I'll give you an example, that our anger is there to protect us, or our anger is there to seek justice, or, you know, to protect us in some way. Our depression can be teaching us that, you know, maybe, okay, so if we have depression because we have, you know, failed relationship after failed relationship, what is the lesson in the sadness or that situation? Yeah. It's possibly that you're not valuing yourself the way that you need to, and therefore you're staying with people or entertaining relationships that disrespect you or disturb your peace, you know? So finding the lesson and then acknowledging that lesson to the universe or even just to yourself, and then being able to implement the lesson into your life, in your daily life, in your actions, and actively, visually and energetically releasing that.
Yeah.
And then filling yourself or flooding yourself with, you know, the things that you would like to feel instead. And like I said, it does require taking steps also. So that's, I think, a great start for people.
Yeah. And I mean, it just like with therapy, laying on a couch with somebody, it can take you to some points of harsh personal realizations. You know, that you have to reconcile. Like I almost made a joking post a few weeks ago about the lead singer from the band Boston. And like, hey, buddy, you may want to take a break from the ladies for a little while and do a little self-work. Sounds like you got a problem. Every other song is named after a different lady. And sounds like you break up with every one of them, and the only common factor here is you.
Oh, man.
That's so really you may want to check into that.
Right.
But be willing to check into that.
Mm-hmm.
Be willing to see the fact that, like, the only crazy Einstein thing going on here is me. The only point of repetition here is my action.
Mm-hmm.
And being willing to revoke your action.
Right. Time for some soul searching, bud.
Yeah. Well, it can take you to a lot of places. Once again, whether it's on a couch or under hypnosis, and you really do have to be ready to decompress that.
You know what? I really appreciate I a lot of my clients are actual therapists, and I love this because they value the work that I do and they value therapy in general. So even us, as different types of therapists, holistic therapists, you know, we also need to release sometimes. And when we're helping people every day do this, right? We need to find our own way to release. So it's interesting how you were, you know, speaking of whether you're sitting on the couch and, you know, doing this form of therapy. I am a big believer in all kinds of combination therapies. And
oh, absolutely.
I really do appreciate that, you know, they value this, because a lot of people think that, you know, regular traditional therapists are not a fan of hypnotherapy, but it's simply not the case. You know, a lot of doctors actually offer hypnotherapy, but it's still not as mainstream and not everybody understands it.
Well, because of the misconceptions, everybody thinks that it is stage hypnosis. Mesmerization is what you're doing in a hypnosis session. And that is not the case.
Right.
You are not bending anybody beyond their free will ever at any point. You are not bending anybody to the point of breaking at any point.
Right.
There are a lot of big misconceptions. There's not even like a shiny object involved.
Right. Stage hypnosis is wildly different.
Zero pendulums.
Yeah. Right. I mean, we can use them to see how hypnotizable they're going to be, but it's not always used. Because when someone's coming to you intentionally to work on something, yeah, we already know that their subconscious mind wants to accept this. And the amazing thing is that the subconscious mind absorbs and adopts everything it needs to when it's ready. And when you're there and willing and ready to make the changes, your subconscious mind can adopt this quite easily.
And what about those of divergent mind, Jessica? What about those of troubled mind who may want to explore maybe the source of their troubles? Like for instance, targeted individuals who may want to explore the option of being able to figure out what the source of some of this might be.
So are you referring to possibly like ADHD individuals, things like this, like neurodivergent?
Not just ADHD, but also people who are targeted, people who hear voices, things like that, through weaponry, that kind of stuff. But being able to maybe track back to a point of trauma that makes them susceptible to begin with.
So this is a case where a doctor would absolutely need to be present. So this would be probably not an area that I would be super comfortable with unless there was a doctor there, because we have no idea, you know, where this person is at. When it comes to other people who have, you know, certain difficulties, like, for example, ADHD or, you know, such severe anxiety that it's hard for them to even listen to a session or sit still for that long, I have had clients who have gone on medication just to get their emotions under control and then start the hypnotherapy process and then get off the meds. And this is especially great for people who don't want to be on medication. And a lot of people just simply don't want to be on medication. So in those cases, the best approach is to have a recording that they can listen to as many times a day as they possibly can, once or twice a day. Sometimes people listen to it three times a day if they have the time.
Sure.
It's that way of rewiring the brain for those, you know, different reactions and to manage those anxiety reactions, for example.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, I am currently going through a few tests. Went early this morning to take care of a few things, and I have anxiety attacks in my sleep, Jessica.
Wow.
You couldn't be more relaxed. I'm asleep.
Wow. So what's the approach so far, if you're comfortable talking about it?
Try to sleep.
Yeah. Is the process trying to discover what's causing it exactly?
Yeah.
Or?
Yeah. I mean, I've definitely gone to some talk therapy before. I'm on anxiety medications. I'm on supplemental anxiety medications for travel, that kind of stuff. Aside from that, it's a lot of self-exploration, a lot of tracking back at the end of the day, a lot of personal tracking of emotion in moments.
Okay.
As far as why I'm feeling the way I'm feeling and having a good emotional check. Years ago, when I was first diagnosed with anxiety, Jessica, I had a therapist, Joe. Great guy. It was when I first got on meds, and I explained to him the way that my brain works. Even right now, as I'm talking to you, my legs are bouncing in different rhythms.
I understand.
My brain works really fast and in a lot of different ways at the same time. And it's very hard for me to quiet down. And it's very hard for me not to get caught in a circular train of thought. Especially whenever there's something negative involved.
Understandable.
So it led to a lot of problems in a lot of my life for a very long time until I realized the fact that I could just as easily say something positive to myself every time that I'd say something negative. I could just as easily flip that coin like I teach other people to. You know, like, hey, you know, guaranteed there's one positive thing that happened to you today. Look for it.
Amazing. Right.
And like repeat it. And when you find it, repeat it. Be happy. And he explained to me my anxiety as a train. And he was like, if you came up to a crossroads and there was a train, would you stop or would you keep going? I was like, I'd stop. He's like, would you try to grab onto the train? I'm like, no, it's a train. It's like, all right. Then when your anxiety comes, you need to just watch the train. Accept the fact that there's a train. Don't worry about where it's coming from right now. Don't worry about where it's going right now. You need to just let the train pass. Later on, when the train isn't there, you can figure out where the train came from, where it was going, what it was carrying, what have you. Don't play with the train while it's in motion.
I love this analogy.
Bad things happen when you play with the train while it's in motion, Chris. Let it pass you.
Incredible.
And
sounds amazing.
That was the beginning of a lot of self-exploration for me and stopping of a lot of negative self-talk, stopping of a lot of negative talk to begin with, because I realize I manifest most of that in myself. And now whenever I have an anxiety attack, like, yeah, I'll typically, my wife gets upset. I'll typically push myself 3 to 5 steps further. That's just me. It's the only way I'll get that far next time.
Right.
Is to push 3 or 5 steps further. And then I'll stop. And I'll figure it out later. But
that's really great.
The only reason I'm having an anxiety attack to begin with is because something in my world that I care about got so rocked that it scared me. It's the only reason I'm having it. If you're having anxiety attacks, folks, start tracing it back. Guaranteed. Something that you care about so much, whether it's your career, your self-image, the way you think, what have you, something that you care about has been threatened in some way.
It's great advice. And that's excellent advice to figure out.
You're never gonna figure that out in the moment.
Right, because you're overwhelmed with emotion.
Yeah, you are utterly not thinking right. And yes, you need to be willing to accept that. That absolutely. I am yes, irrational right now. And I've tried to tell my wife that, like, when we have gotten into arguments, when I'm in the middle of an anxiety attack, and I try to tell her, like, I am irrational. I can tell you nothing right now.
Yeah, absolutely.
I got nothing. I got nothing but utter anger right now, and I can't tell you why. Give me 5 minutes, and I will come at you with an answer. But right now, I got nothing. That's what's right here. That's all I can deal with.
That's so, so important, though. You know, like when I do, you know, because I do spiritual readings too, and sometimes things will come up about mastering your emotions. And the way I explain that to people is exactly what you just said. Like, just because you feel something doesn't mean you need to react.
That's right.
You can wait. You can process those feelings for a day, a few hours, a couple of days, and then think about how you want to respond or react. And when I learned that, it changed my life, because I have always been very reactive, like my whole life. And I'm definitely not now. Yeah. So I will process and observe. And like you were taught, observe my feelings or observe my thoughts. Right. And then do the processing later when I'm ready. And I do work with a lot of clients on that. And I feel like that's a really powerful move that we can do for ourselves.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And it is truly a point of self-accountability, because we've had the conversation before, Jessica, back in the old dudes and beer days of we are utterly responsible for every vibration that we drag into a room.
Definitely. You know, I saw something recently and I posted it. It was about how to deal with other people provoking you, right? I had a situation that came up where I was provoked. I simply did not engage. You know, I was like, and then I the post that I found was like, you know, steps about how to handle those situations. And the one said, you have response dash ability. So response as in a response, spelled obviously different than responsibility. You have responsibility, meaning you have the ability to choose how you're going to respond.
That is a system that you are buying into immediately. Like, you are investing in that system when you respond, and you don't have to respond.
Nope.
You do not have to give in to that. You do not have to have the fight. You do not have to have the argument.
You don't have to engage at all.
Yeah. it's utterly a choice.
I'm not gonna be that energy. No thanks.
And, you know, it's interesting, Jessica, because especially here, here in the West, here in America, we have this concept of having to be involved and of, but 90% of the time we don't have to be involved. It's not our place to be involved. Shouldn't want to be involved.
Right. Right. It's funny how people think that just because someone engages that you have to engage back.
Yeah.
No, the heck you don't. Yeah. You can choose when or if you ever want to engage.
Yeah.
Especially depending on the energy that the other person is coming at you with.
Mm.
Like, nope, that's not an energy I feel like entertaining, so I'm not going to.
Yeah. Yeah. And believe me, I had the situation with a good friend that led to a meltdown of friendship that later got rebuilt. And we respect each other. And we love each other on different levels. And it's one of those that, when the conflagration happened, what angered him more than anything was the fact that I would not engage.
Oh, wow.
And I was like, I revoke. Like, I'm sorry, man. I rescind my consent.
Right. Your involvement.
I'm not engaging in this at all. And I mean, like, texts, voice, didn't matter. Mm-hmm. I did not engage.
Sometimes you just, you know, don't want to, because it's not the energy you want to be in. And sometimes we don't always have the mental capacity or emotional capacity to be, you know, playing the game.
That's okay. It's okay to say, like, hey, I got to the point at one life at one point in life, Jessica, and I know we've had the conversation before. I know my audience has heard it before. It led me to the point of personal addiction where I worked on other people more than myself. Not going to say I didn't do great things, that I didn't lead people to great things. But you know what I wasn't doing? Taking care of me, period.
Yeah.
You know what the universe wants? A good me. The best me it can get.
Oh, yeah. I've been having this conversation a lot lately with friends and clients and so on. And it's like, we, especially when we're in, you know, when we're either healers or we deal with psychology or people's traumas or problems or any of that, you know, we have to be really careful not to push ourselves into a level of burnout and make sure that we're taking care of ourselves, because you're not good for anyone if you run yourself into the ground, obviously. So it's a really delicate balance.
It really is. But like we were saying a while ago, until you get to that point that you realize that your personal happiness won't be there because you're not fulfilled in yourself of yourself. Your relationships, romantically, personally, they will suffer because you're not fulfilled. You're looking for other people to fill in your gaps like a jigsaw puzzle.
Definitely. I still struggle sometimes with overdoing it, and I won't know that I'm overdoing it until I start feel completely spiritually, energetically, mentally, emotionally drained.
Yeah.
And I'm like, my God, I can't move. At what point do you call self-care?
At what point do you go, yo, blow the whistle, enough. It's Jessica time, 48 hours, nobody, nothing. Kids, don't bug me. Go eat an apple.
I'm such a nurturer by nature and a giver, and I feel innately responsible somehow for other people's well-being. So I tend to, you know, overdo it as far as like reaching back out immediately a lot. And I've had to really take a step back sometimes and say, okay, I'm at my capacity today. And I know that, you know, there's 20 plus or however many messages waiting, and I just can't get to them today.
Yeah.
And that has to be okay some days, you know, and other days I don't have that many messages, and there's other days I'm not feeling, you know, but it's just that matter of balancing. And, you know, I'll notice an impact on my energy when I'm starting to overdo it or when I have overdone it. But at least I have the tools now to know what's going on, because if it were 5-6 years ago, I would just keep going and completely neglect my own well-being at the expense of, you know, helping others. And I've learned that being a martyr is not all that honorable, actually. Well,
and honestly, Jessica, to have known you almost 5 years now, like, as you said that, it just dawned on me that, yeah, we've known each other almost 5 years.
Yeah. Yeah.
And crazy. Like, since my kid was one.
Yes, exactly.
And he's almost six. And to see your growth, to see your personal growth, to see the blessings that you have, and to see you grow to the point of letting those anchors go and flying. It's beautiful. It's fantastic. It really is.
I really appreciate that. Thank you so much.
Well, I mean, you know, you're an amazing individual. And as you said a while ago, we all deal sometimes with this unnecessary self-imposed burden that for some reason we think we owe a debt to somebody else, or that we have a responsibility to fulfill somebody else's wish or want for us.
Mm-hmm, definitely.
And it becomes a point of responsibility that we carry that causes us to make bad decisions. So I'm glad to see that you have taken the many years to work on yourself and get yourself to the point of being able to see the blessings around you and the great and amazing things that are abounding.
Yeah, thank you. It's been an amazing journey, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm always learning and I'm always just absorbing like a sponge. You know, I'm a knowledge seeker like you are. So
yeah.
For me, it's just like this never ending journey of like, you know, there's always more to learn. And you know what? I love that.
Yeah.
Actually.
Precisely. And where can people go? Let's take the next couple minutes to let folks know where they can go for personal coaching, where they can go for neuro-linguistic programming to kind of start learning to change their everyday life without hard hypnosis sessions.
So I think the best place to go is my Heal Me page. So it's heal.me/Jessica Gerlach Heard. I know it's a little long, but it's on your link. And you know, if they would like to speak to me, consultations are free. They can book that right on the site. And, you know, a lot of times I can hear their situation out and there's always tips and steps that I can give them even before a session that they can start using on their own. And if, you know, if they ever did want to book anything, all the information is on that site. And yeah, I mean, like any women, you know, obviously on my focus as I work with women, they can reach out to me through Instagram. They can reach out to me on my Facebook page. I'm always open to hearing, you know, the situation and giving my best guidance possible.
Well, thank you so much for always being willing to come on the show, talk about these topics like hypnosis, manifestation, and neuro-linguistic programming. I think we do not realize the potential that we hold literally within ourselves.
Absolutely.
And as we learn to release that as people and as a society, I think we will ultimately learn what it is to understand each other in a totally different way. It's hard not to have the feels once you get this way. I mean, granted, in the beginning, it can be rough. It can be very rough because there's a big point of realization. And much like any spiritual realization, it can be hard not to have that Machiavelli moment looking around you and going, look at all these cattle. You know, but after a while, it really and truly becomes a point of compassion.
Definitely.
And the fact of you hope everybody learns to accept this and learn this and find this in their life for themselves.
Yeah, it's so empowering. It truly is. I appreciate you, Chris. Thank you so much for having me on. I'm glad we did this. It has been a while and it was really, really great catching up.
You bet. Let's definitely make it more frequent because I'd love to have you on again and again. We always have a great conversation and we always go places with what we as a people in society should be doing for each other. So thank you so much for the time. Hold the line while we close things out, Jessica, all right?
Okay, sounds good.
Okay. While you are online, of course, checking out heal.me and Jessica Gerlach Heard's personal page there, make sure to stop on by Facebook, join the conversation, follow us on Curious Realm there. That is our page. You can go and join the group. We have tons of conversations. We have tons of articles that we post. Stop on by the website. That is where you can find all the episodes. That's where you can find the knowledge vault. That is where you can find all kinds of things, including our Share Your Story page, curiousrealm.com/story. If you have had an experience with the paranormal, the other than, cryptids, what have you, stop on by, share your story with us, and we will present it to our professionals. Thank you so much for tuning in, as always, everybody. So glad to be back home. So glad to be back with you. Take care of yourselves. Take care of each other. And remember, stay curious. We'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye. Thank you for tuning in to this episode of The Curious Realm. Stay tuned for more guests, forbidden topics, and hidden truths. Download the official Curious Realm app and view the Knowledge Vault on our website, CuriousRealm.com. Follow us on social media by searching Curious Realm. Curious Realm is available on your favorite podcast services, as well as YouTube, Roku, Amazon Fire, and Apple TV through the APR TV app, available on all app markets. Curious Realm is a proud member of the HC Universal Network family of podcasts. For more great content, or to become a sponsor of Curious Realm or other podcasts, visit hcuniversalnetwork.com today. Thanks for listening. Stay curious. And remember, the other side is always watching.